It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush. Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City 90.7 FM, Delmarva Public Radio. It's time now for a special writer's edition of Delmarva Today with host Harold Wilson.
Maybe it is the memories, the change of pace that brings us there. The sense of vacation, maybe the smell of the place, the sights of the gulls, the dunes, the grasses. But oh, it is the feel of it, the crunch and slide of it, the feeling of beach sand, so different from dirt, soil, loam. No, not earthy, moist, rich, but oh, so granular and gritty, even when wet. Movable paper, spreading under toes, sliding beneath the soles, smoothing my skin, clearing my mind, unburdening me of the rest, drawing me to the tactile, the feel of beach sand. Beach Sand by Raymond A. Foss. Welcome to Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. It's summer, and we're talking about the beach today. The sun, the warmth that draws us by the thousands to the edge of the sea. For those who live along the border of the ocean, and even for those who visit for a short period of time, a way of life develops that is more relaxed, open, and even accepting. As Raymond Foss indicates, there is a tactile sense, a feel of touching, being more like one with the rawness of nature. We could say there is something we might call beach life. My guest today is Nancy Sakadusky. Nancy is owner of Cat and Mouse Press and organizer of the Rehoboth Beach Reads Short Story Contest. Cat and Mouse Press publishes beach reads for adults and children, including an annual anthology that contains the winning entries from the short story contest. The latest anthology is Beach Life. Joining me along with Nancy are Mary Power, one of the contest judges, Jackson Copley, author of The Bomber Jacket, Marie Lathers, author of Rearrangements, and Robin Glandon, who will provide a special reading of that story. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
It's good to be here.
Nancy, you've been on the program a number of times now, and we're glad to have you back.
You.
Tell us about the Rehoboth Beach Reads contest and your involvement in the contest.
Well, this is the sixth year for the contest. It's been a great process. It provides an opportunity for local writers to submit entries. Each year we have a theme. This year's theme was Beach Life. And through the contest, authors go through the process of writing, revising, editing, polishing, submitting, and then waiting to hear whether their work has been accepted. So it's good practice for a beginner, but it's also a good opportunity for an experienced writer. Jackson Copley is a good example of that. He's written his own books, But through the contest, he ended up having an award-winning short story that provided one of the most interesting reads in the book. It's very short, as you'll see, but it's quite an interesting story. So we get a wide range of stories because we have all different writers. And every year, the contest judges, like Mary, do a great job of selecting just a most eclectic mix of stories. So they're fun books to read.
It's a the contest is a themed contest, isn't it? So tell us a bit about this theme and about some of the past themes.
Okay. I try to come up with a theme that is general enough that it doesn't limit the writers, but it provides a little sense of continuity for the reader as the reader goes through the book. So, for example, one year we had the theme, the boardwalk. And so the stories had to have something to do with the Rehoboth boardwalk. This year, Beach Life, this past year, was a sort of a wide open theme because as you saw that in that poem, I mean, there's all different ways to think about the beach. So we had a lot of different takes on that. The theme that's going on now for the contest that ends July 1st is beach fun. So yet another sort of wide open theme. But the writers come up with all sorts of different takes on it. The one year we had the theme, the beach house. And I was afraid we might have all stories that had, you know, a little typical beach cottage. But the authors came up with all sorts of things. Lighthouses, the Children's Beach House, which was a facility for handicapped children. Cottages, mansions. I mean, all different kinds of things. So it's interesting.
I think Robin Glandon, who is with us today, will remember the beach house, I think it is, because I think it was the beach house that we had the story, the portrait. Am I right about that, Nancy? Is that
was one of the many good stories? I don't remember which one it was in. Was it in the beach house?
Beach Nights.
Beach Nights. Yeah,
we had
one year we had beach days, and another year we had beach nights. Yeah. So it's, I mean, over 5 years, it's hard to keep all the stories straight. And Robin has been in several books.
As you can tell, so, I'm having trouble keeping them
It's a nice problem, though.
Yeah. Well, that's it's wonderful. And in terms of the contest, you have a sponsor.
Yes,
and who's the sponsor of the contest?
Browse About Books, from the very first year, has put up the cash awards. We have a $500 first prize, $250 second prize, and $100 third prize. And they got behind this contest year one when nobody had done this before. It was an unknown quantity. They didn't know me. It was relatively new to the area. It was a new concept. And so I'm very grateful to them for committing to this and staying committed to this every year. So they're a focal point for this contest and for the books. They host the launch party. They always have a nice, right now they have a lovely display of some of the Beach Reads books right up front with Ellen Hildebrandt and all the traditional Beach Read authors. And they've really been very supportive of the contest and of Cat and Mouse Press in general. Our children's books are always well displayed on the Beach Reads for adults, other than even the contest.
Well, tell us a little bit more about Cat and Mouse Press. We know you do the beach reads.
Right.
What kind of books do you do?
Well, almost all of our books have a Delmarva beach connection. So we have the anthologies that result from the contest. This year, we also had an anthology that was not a contest. It's an anthology of love stories that take place in various beach towns along the coast here. And so there are a number of writers, including Robin, who contributed stories to that. We just came out with that in large print. That was our first large print book. Gail Priest, who's an author that's written extensively on in the Eastern Shore, did a lovely collection of short stories for us called Eastern Shore Shorts, which sort of stemmed from Nancy Sherman's book, Sandy Shorts, which was another anthology, single author anthology that's been very popular.
A great name, by the way.
Yes, that was that was Nancy's idea. That was part of what sold me on it. It's a very clever idea. So we played off that with Eastern Shore Shorts. And then we also have children's books. We have a Rehoboth 1-2-3, some ABC books, and The Mermaid in Rehoboth Bay, which was our most recent hardcover children's book.
Well, I noticed Beach Love. How did authors come to be selected for Beach Love?
What happened was Cindy Cavett, who's a local writer and blogger, came to me with the idea of doing an anthology of romance stories. And initially, she pitched it as something she would do on her own. And I talked to her about it, and I said, you know, how would you feel about opening it up to other writers so it has a lot more variety and different styles and so forth? And she generously agreed to that. I mean, it's hard for a writer to give up a turf like that, but she was very generous about it and said, that's a great idea. And she actually helped me select the stories. So she has an associate editor credit in the book. So she contributed a couple stories. Robin, I went to authors I knew either wrote romance or had submitted romances to past contests that didn't get selected for one reason or another. You know, there are good stories that just, you know, for whatever reason, don't make it into a contest book that year. Doesn't mean that isn't a good story and that wouldn't be a good fit. So some of the stories were submitted to previous contests and some were handpicked authors that I knew had the chops to write a good beach romance.
Well, you go to authors and get them to submit books. Do authors who know you submit books to you? And how does that work, Nancy?
Well, you know, we're very small, so I have to be very selective. And I have to keep my mission of keeping things local. So I'll get submissions that are general thrillers, romances, mysteries, and so forth. And I just honestly can't do that justice. I just don't have the marketing machine and the distribution to do that. So I look for a Delmarva connection, like we have with the Eastern Shore Shorts and the Beach Love and Sandy Shorts. So that's the first thing. I look for the quality of the writing. I look at the market to see, you know, is this something that will sell readily in our stores? I push almost all of our books through stores. We don't do Kindle books, and I do, although they're available online through Amazon and the other big retailers, I don't encourage that because I really believe in small independent stores. We're independent, and so are our customers. So I really try to push that.
So if someone wants to try to publish a book, mm-hmm. they can bring their book to you and you will at least look it over
and make
a decision.
I don't publish for money. Sometimes people will come to me and say, how much would you charge to publish this for me? And I don't do that. There are people who do that, but I don't. I select books that I would publish because I'm a publisher and I think it's a good book worthy of being published, and it fits my company's niche.
Well, Beach Life mm-hmm. is a contest book,
yes.
and it is a beach read.
Definitely.
What's a beach read, Nancy?
Well, people vary as to how they would describe that, but certainly short stories are ideal for the beach. So let's start with that. A lot of people read novels at the beach, and that's fine. But, you know, you're at the beach. There's noises. There's kids running around. You get up to get a snow cone or bag of French fries or something, and you get interrupted. And so short stories are perfect because they can be read in short bursts. Also, people tend to like lighter material, although some of our stories, especially Nancy Sherman, can write some stories that have a little bit of darkness to them, but they always have that element of hope or inspiration. So I think people like to read that sort of thing, something that takes them away from their daily work and troubles and so forth, and is a little bit uplifting, but has enough meat that it's worth their time. So that would be, I guess, my description of it. Light, but with a little bit of meat.
Let me say light, but also with some weight.
There you go.
There's the contradiction for you, which we all like in a good short story.
You want to be challenged a little bit, but you don't want to be reading, you know, a math textbook on the beach.
That's right.
At least I wouldn't.
Mary, let me turn to you. As a judge for the contest, how do you decide personally? Well, a couple of questions. One, how do you decide yourself? Well, I like this. This kid. What kind of criterion do you use? And then how do you work together with your fellow judges to come with a good decision?
Well, those are excellent questions. First of all, I do very little. Nancy organizes it all. So the first thing I think a judge needs to do is to follow the guidelines that are presented, and that would be originality, creativity, fitting the theme. If a piece meets those, then I think each individual judge has a rubric that can be applied. So what I do is I do decimal points. And I'll look at craft elements such as, is the story complex enough? Is the pacing available because you want to get in to read to get out? I look at craft elements such as, is the quality of the plot, the narrative, is the narrative compelling? And I make notes, and I come to the meeting with pages of check pluses and minuses. Nancy's system is, and please correct me, Nancy, if I get it wrong, there are five judges?
Six.
Okay, right there. And we go through a series, and we rate in the first pile the ones that are going to go forward. And so by the end of the sessions, we have all read almost everything. And at the end, everybody reads everything that's moved to the last level. Then Nancy has a point system. We meet. We either discuss in person or we discuss over the phone, however it happens. In addition to ranking them in first, second, we also have judges' picks, so that by the time the book is finished, are there 30 in here, Nancy?
There were 25 this
25
year.
25 this year. So by the time the book is finished, those 25 stories have been through dozens of eyes, and we've talked about them, and if they're, we come to consensus, and that's under Nancy's leadership. So my background is in literary criticism and in literary fiction, so I will apply those kinds of concepts. I love the use of language and the text, you know, the sensory modalities. So that's something I will focus on. I don't know what other judges will. But most of the time, I think we come together. A good short story has an emotional feeling to it that when you're finished with it, you exhale and go, oh, yeah. And I think that's basically what the judges apply. Whether I like the theme or I like the topic, liking it is not sufficient. It's necessary, but it's not sufficient. There has to be some gusto to the story.
So you have 25 books. How many stories are you going to publish?
The number of stories in the book depend on the length. So for example, this was the first year we had 25, but that was in part because Jackson's story was only a little over 500 words, which is unusual. If we had all stories that were up near the upper 3,500 word limit, we have fewer stories to put in. So it varies year to year.
So if you have a book, Mary, that you really like,
yes,
and you're not getting the same vibe from your fellow judges, how do you advocate for your heartfelt choice and move the other judges in your direction, or tell me that never happens?
Well, okay, first I'm from Jersey, so I come with attitude, okay? You know, and we have the shore. So if I want to advocate, I certainly am not shy about it. In general, my sheath of papers sort of helps because I can prove what I'm saying. I can point to it, and I'm, you know, 0.2 degrees, you know, from the third best book or whatever. But I think that what happens is everyone has enjoyed all of the reads. I mean, that's a given. So what you're really discussing is a very tiny, tiny response, either from a craft point of view, or perhaps thematically it doesn't fit, or perhaps it is so great that I have very little difficulty. And if three of us agree, you know, then you have a little bit of a front going on. If, in fact, my opinion is not worthy, and that has happened a couple times. This is not, I've not just judged this once. You know, as long as that story gets in, then I'm happy. I'm happy for the author. I'm happy for the people who are reading. I believe that this is one of the best sellers during the summer from Browseabout. So it behooves the judges to do a good job and to listen to each other and to make sure that whatever is going to be between those pages is something that a vacationer, like someone from Jersey, would want to read.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can understand what you're saying. And earlier you mentioned the word consensus as well. So I'm sure in the process there's a little bit of give and take as you go. But I thought that was an excellent description of the way the judging probably works and should work. Yeah.
I will say in 5 years, the judges have always had consensus on the top prize winners, which is remarkable. And it's in part because of attitudes like Mary, where they'll work and discuss and sort of present their feelings. But I always have wanted a consensus for the cash prize winners, because that ensures that it's a fair contest, that no one judge can sway the process. The closest we ever got to not full consensus was actually this year for Beach Life, and they could not decide for third place. And so we, for the first time, had a tie.
So you have a first place, I noticed, second, third.
And
then you have judges' awards.
Judges, yeah.
What are the judges' awards?
Each judge gets to choose a story, and I ask them to choose one that did not win one of the top awards so that there are more prizes given out. And I asked them to choose a story that they felt had particular merit. And then they put a little comment, which I print in the book, of why they thought that story had particular merit. And it didn't even have to be one that got into the top grouping. If there was one they thought got sort of lost in the shuffle that they really wanted to give an accolade, they could call that out.
I think all of the stories offer a little paragraph at the end,
yes,
don't they, as to why they were chosen?
Well, the award ones do, uh-huh. not the other ones,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear one of these stories then. And Jackson, before you read your story to us, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, thank you. I'll be glad to. I always joke that I wanted to become a writer when I didn't need the money. You know, so that means in retirement, I was able to do that. My career has always been in high tech. I worked for the Bell System for many years, a second career with IBM. And although a lot of people say that my reports at IBM seem like fiction, they were not. And I always wanted to entertain.
The physicist doesn't lie.
Yeah,
now,
physicist
come on,
doesn't
Jackson.
Lie. No, we're all about facts. And I do have a degree in physics. I graduated from NC State and went into high tech before being a geek was fashionable, as in Silicon Valley. But I always have a passion for it, and I find that when I sit down and write, it opens up the characters talking to me. It's a wonderful thing. I think about a plot, a story, but it's only once you start putting your fingers on those keyboards that you really have it coming together. It starts to flow, and I like that process. So my wife Ellen will tell you that many times I've come from my office and I say, yes, that was good. At least in my own mind, I have to, a lot of people edit it and formulate it and critique it before it becomes a finished product.
Well, is this the first contest you've entered, Jackson, or have you written a lot of other fiction?
Well, I have been writing fiction for just about 3-4 years now, and I have a novel out, Leaving Lisa, and I got another novel coming out probably before the end of the year. So I'm trying to be as productive as I can now. But yeah, it's a new thing to me about writing. And no matter how much you think you are a good writer, there's so much to develop. I don't know. I think it's a lifelong experience, and I'm just getting started.
Well, listen, read your story to us, will you?
I'd be glad to. Thank you. The Bomber Jacket. Brown leather, cracked with age, yet still supple after all these years. First worn by a man of the greatest generation in war, later acquired by a young boy to appease a passing style, and now hanging here in a consignment shop on 2nd Street in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. The embroidered patches spoke its heritage. 827th Bomber Squad on the back, the flying A on one shoulder, and Old Glory on the other. But setting this one jacket apart from any other, a red Maryland terrapin pin, the ornament took my breath away. That pin I put on this jacket many years ago. Holding the jacket to my face, I smelled the salt and smoke of that night in Dewey. He was so young, or so it seemed now when everything becomes younger as I get older. Dark green eyes, black hair, and a swagger that made him seem taller than he was. He wore this bomber jacket over a white tee, more prideful in the latest fad than to stay warm in the cool weather of spring break at the beach. His swagger put me off, but his charm won me over that spring, So cool, so confident, he drew me in. Walking with him made the delights of the boardwalk more delightful. Dolly's popcorn was heaven's manna. A burger from Gus and Gus, fine mignon. The odd flavors of the ice cream store became culinary exploration. His irresistible laugh made me love him. It was deep, exposing no care in the world. What do you want to do in life? I asked. Everything, he said. I'm sure he would. How I remember the unlimited possibilities, the adrenaline rush of what might be possible when the world was still new to you. If only I could recapture that gold nugget possessed by youth. We sat by a bonfire on Dewey's Beach one dark evening as the short break neared its end. In the moonless sky, the stars over the ocean were magic. Despite the warmth of the fire, I shivered. He took off his prize jacket and placed it over my shoulders. I could not have gotten a more personal token from anyone. We swore we would stay in touch. No texting back in those days, just a postcard sent and received now and then. Like all spring romances for the young, forever. Like all spring romances for the young, forever does not live long. He, like me, must have continued with real life. I never knew. I married, raised kids, divorced, lived on my own. From time to time, I would recall that spring break. What drew me into this shop, I do not know. I never go to consignment shops. Yet, here I am, holding this vestige of the past. It was his bomber jacket, there could be no doubt. The night at the bonfire, I put that pin on his jacket. Something from my school to remind him of me. He said he would keep it there always. It appears he did just that. I must have held the jacket in my hands too long. A sales girl wanted to know if she could help me. I asked her, why is the jacket here? Estate sale. It was a simple answer that spoke volumes. Forever does not live long.
What brought that story to you, Jackson?
I think that the beach conjures up past romances. I can remember going to high school, spring break, the beach, and all of the things about that. And probably as a guy, they were not as romantic as that story. But still, looking back on it, there was a lot of fondness I had for the location, the memory, and I think as the years go back, the memories make it even more special. So I wanted to capture that in a story, and bomber jackets were a fad at a point in time. Real ones from World War II were the ones that were popular. So I thought about that. I thought about a favorite consignment store that Ellen likes to go to, and I thought it'd be the perfect locale for it. So it incorporated a past fad of kids, the beach, the consignment store where I could locate this artifact. And the story just started to flow from that. I wrote it in an afternoon. It's a short story. I write about 500 words a day, so that was my production. After that, I had to have some editing, like Nancy was the one who caught the fact that I first called it Second Avenue. It's Second Street. So there's little things like that, at the very least, you want to have right because it'll stop somebody that is familiar with the location.
What's the time of this bonfire? What year are we looking at?
That the bonfire happened?
Mm-hmm.
It happened sometime in the 60s, late 60s.
So the story is set in the 60s?
No.
That was really my question. When was the setting?
That person is talking to you from today.
Okay.
This is all happening today. Somebody about my age who would have been in high school in the 60s when bomber jackets were popular.
Let me ask it a different way. When did you put the pin on the jacket?
In 1968.
Okay. Good. That was the time of the bonfire. Was 1968.
And the other thing I had to do is in the editing, is the locations I mentioned had to be there in 1968.
Oh, sure.
Well, I had one that was not. That I researched a couple more that were. Places like Gus and Gus, I think, have been there since the turn of the other century. But they have been, they're places that you want authenticity.
You know, as a little aside, and Nancy will, and Mary too, probably respond to this. Because you're writing fiction doesn't mean that it's all fiction. If you're in a setting, what happened at that time is what happened at that time, and you cannot invent something that was not there.
That is correct.
Put it there.
I'm writing a novel now. I just finished the first draft of it, in which it's a flight of fancy in a way, because these explorers discover a tablet that looks modern, but it was left there in this cave 10,000 years ago. Now, do you know of any such tablet? No. But every other thing about that novel is where it is. I've been to Carlsbad Cavern. It's discovered in New Mexico. I talk about that in realistic terms. I was editing the book, and the elevator buttons going down into the cavern have just two buttons. And I messed up what they were labeled as. I said one was C for cavern, and the other one is V for visitor center. And I had T and B for top and bottom. So these all have to be spot on. Because if one reader knew that, that'd be wrong.
It's called research.
Yeah. Right.
Mary, why did you like the story?
I like this story because I'm in love with the short form. And in 500 words, to put something together that has a beginning, a middle, and end, has the impetus, has all of the characteristics of a full-blown story with the emotional component, that to me is brilliant, to do it in 500 words. That's to take nothing away from the longer stories. But I appreciate that form. I think in this particular case, the fact that the bomber jacket is actually a character and it has all the sensory details, that to me was the outstanding part. Everybody has memories from high school. On the other hand, my father was a pilot, private and professional navigator before GPSs. So I have always had a love for that smell of the leather, the bomber jacket. My husband was a pilot. Bought me a bomber jacket. So that concept of the tactile, thank you. The tactile aspect of the jacket and that pin sitting on it was terrific. There was no soft spot in that story whatsoever.
You know, it's interesting, and now I shouldn't interject this, but I will. it's interesting that in the 1950s in high school, it wasn't a bomber jacket. It was a Levi jacket. And we all wore Levi jackets, and we gave them to our girlfriends to wear. So it was the passing, not of a bomber jacket. We were too young to be bomber pilots or anything, but we shared a Levi jacket with our girlfriends. Well, another excellent story in Beach Life is called Rearrangements, and it's by Marie Lathers. And Marie, you're with us, aren't you?
I sure am.
Oh, Marie, it's great. It's great to have you. We're going to read your story.
Okay.
Robin Glandon is going to read your story, and then we'd like to talk to you a little bit about it, if we can. Can you stay on with us for a while to
I
do
sure
that?
Can. Yes.
Oh,
I'd love to.
All right. Well, let's turn to Rearrangements, read to us by Robin Glandon. Robin.
Rearrangements. I'm Evelyn Brine, and it's good to meet you. Is this your first time in Rehoboth? No? Well, then maybe you've seen one of my arrangements. I start with a large scallop shell, and then I put smaller treasures in it. A whelk, a shark's eye, a piece of sea glass, the kinds of things you find on the beach here. Let's just say that the owners of good restaurants in town know what it means to provide a beach-worthy centerpiece on every table. My arrangements distinguish the Rehoboth eateries from the ones in Dewey and Bethany. And they pay me $7 a centerpiece, which sure adds up. You won't catch me wondering where my money went at the end of my life. It's in the bank. What I haven't spent on long-distance calls, that is, because of my granddaughter, Penny. Penny used to run my phone bills out of sight. She has one of those iPhones now, so long distance is the same as local, but she hardly even talks on the phone anymore. She works over at City Hall, designing pamphlets for the tourists, insists on living here with me in my old place. I'm a lucky grandmother, that's for sure. We get along just fine, but it took a while for us to get there. It's the summer of 2013, so that makes it 2 years since the thaw. Penny, I'm too old for this, I told her when she started complaining about everything. Every sound I made, every meal I cooked, and every place I put a knick-knack. In my own home. You're living in my place, and I have a right to exist in it just like I always have, without a young upstart coming back from a fancy college and bossing me around. I paused for effect. And that's the first and last time I'm going to remind you of that. I was 74 years old and happy enough with my life the way it was. I didn't ask Penny's mother to send her here to Rehoboth from D.C. after she finished college with a C average, $30,000 in student loans, and a bad attitude. Great way to start off in life. But she did. My daughter sent her here lickety-split when she realized Penny had no intention of pursuing a career in interdisciplinary studies, whatever that is, than she did in paying back her loans. 4 years she spent in that private college in the mountains of Virginia, long enough to perfect her taste for high elevation life and her distaste for sea-level common sense. But when she was a child, oh, mighty, you couldn't keep her off the beach. Even promising an ice cream if she'd walk up to the boardwalk couldn't get her to leave the sand and waves behind. That girl loved the ocean and everything in and around it. Until she went hormonal, that is. Adolescence has wrecked many a young girl who was otherwise on the road to a healthy and worthwhile life, and it left Penny in pieces. At first she resisted like some do. "But I don't want to grow up," she wailed at me that day in July when she woke up with cramps and knew her childhood was over. She was only 12 years old, poor thing, not even a teenager. The next summer, she did nothing but mope around as if Rehoboth were the dark side of the moon and she had been sent here to serve out a prison sentence. Back then, from the time Penny was school age, her mother sent that child to me for most of the summer while she ran around looking for a new husband. And then another new one. Penny had other ideas. I don't want to have to kiss boys. I don't want to have to be nice and pretty and wear makeup. I don't want to get married over and over. Easy enough to see that she didn't want to be like her mother. Penny's change coincided with Gerald's passing, and I spent a few years at my wit's end for want of something to occupy me. For so long, my time was devoted to taking him to doctor's appointments, driving back and forth between here and BB Hospital. Afterwards, the long hours stretched out before me with not much to fill them. Sometimes I even made the trip to the hospital in my car, ate at the cafeteria, and drove back home just to fill the empty space of time. But then there was hormonal Penny, filling it with her complaints. I miss my friends, she wailed day after day. talking on the phone for hours at a time with Ashley, Heather, and Lindsay about boys named Kyle, Shane, and Jordan wasn't good enough for her. Lindsay's in New York City for the summer, and Heather's at a co-ed camp. She made no attempt to find the local boys attractive. I even arranged a date between her and Randall, Mr. Watson's grandson, which made her so mad she didn't talk to me for an entire morning. Randall, they don't even call him Randy. And have you seen his pimples? The hot beach sun can't even dry them out. He smells like a wet shell that had a slimy animal inside, she announced after the date, which lasted all of 23 minutes and consisted of a walk on the boardwalk to the arcade. I was pleased she at least remembered what a dead shell animal smelled like. I told him the Rehoboth Arcade has nothing but old video games and that everyone in D.C. is sick to death of Mortal Kombat. She finally met a 14-year-old hussified girl by the name of Zoe, whom she moped around with for two summers. Once, I smelled tobacco on her and threatened her with no telephone time at all if I smelled it again. Once she was in high school, Penny insisted to her mother that she would not in any way, shape, or form agree to spend vacation with me in my, quote, old home full of old things made for old people, unquote. But my daughter, just as stubborn and with another marriage on the rocks, needed somewhere to board Penny. She sent the girl off to a horse ranch in Virginia, which explains why Penny ended up at a college that was way too expensive and lacking in any major study area that might conceivably lead to a career. So, there she was one morning on my doorstep, 3 weeks after her college graduation, after I hadn't laid eyes on her for 7 years. She had four suitcases and looked as if she'd been starving herself. Meanwhile, I discovered my passion one day at the diner. Staring at the blank table in front of me, I thinking how nice it would look with a centerpiece. No one likes a blank space. Gerald always said I had an eye for fashion, and he was right. My passion had been keeping me sane. Mom says she needs to send me out of the house for at least 2 months, or she and Daryl will end up in divorce court. Daryl couldn't deal with me. And by the way, I hope you have a decent TV now, because I watch the three big ones every afternoon. All My Children, Days of Our Lives, and General Hospital. And if I miss one single day, my sorority sisters will disown me. Apparently, that so-called college had allowed her to sign up for only morning classes so she and her sisters could spend every afternoon on the soaps. They call that an education. She intended to spend the summer watching that junk while she talked on the phone with Erica, Courtney, and Whitney, who didn't seem to have found jobs either. Well, that's fine with me, I told her, since I spend every afternoon on the porch making my arrangements, which are on the tables of many restaurants in Rehoboth. Maybe you'll see one if you ever take your eyes off the TV long enough to go out to eat with me. Until then, you can sit in front of my very capable 15-year-old color TV that your grandpa bought me for Christmas, bless his soul. That's where we stood after a month. Penny watching the soaps and me attempting to make meals that would put some flashback on her and working on my centerpieces. When I heard her scream and then wail like a child, wail like she did when she realized being a woman was not a ride in the park. She ran looking for me on the porch, which doubled as Michelle's studio, and then came wailing into the dining room. Cancel, Grandma! They're threatening to cancel the soaps! What the hell will I do? I simply die! She'd just gotten off the phone with Whitney, who had explained the situation to her. The second decade of the 21st century was headed for disaster, apparently. I'd told Penny that cursing was not allowed in my house, but she must not have heard me. So I asked her to take that wax out of her ears because I had none in mine and I simply did not want to hear that kind of language. And another thing I added, once those soaps are off the air, you'd have a reason to get out into the actual air, the air that the Lord meant for you to breathe, and maybe you'll get some exercise. Well, she just kept right on moping and right on watching the soaps, even though their days were apparently numbered. And I kept right on making my arrangements on the porch, where I had card tables set up to hold shoe boxes full of the different categories of shells, and then different sized boxes to put them in and drive them around town. My mornings were spent on the beach, and my afternoons on McCraft, which made for a good, wholesome, and healthy life if you ask me or anyone I know. Then lo and behold, one day, Penny just walked on out onto the porch, sat down, and started sorting shells. She remembered the names and muttered them while she worked. She left the TV volume up loud, and someone was on trial for something on one of those crazy shows. After an hour, I went in and turned it off, and Penny didn't say a word. We sat like that until dinner time, sorting shells and sea glass and making centerpieces. And she said she was hungry. I made us egg salad sandwiches with chips, pickles, and lemonade, and we had the best time laughing and giggling over all kinds of whatnot. Right before bedtime, Penny got serious. It turns out they're only going to cancel all my children. But I'm done with soaps, Grandma. She paused. Whitney's grandpa died last week, and she stopped watching. I told her I'd stop, too. She looked at me, and I looked back. And for the first time in forever, we really saw each other. I'm sorry for your friend, Penny. And you know, it sure would be nice to spend time together. I've missed your company. We looked at each other again and smiled wide summer smiles. After all, these are the days of our lives.
Marie, there's a significant change at the end of this story, where Penny grows up a bit. How, as you wrote the story and it formed in your mind, how do you think that Penny changed? I mean, there was the death of her friend's grandfather, but What do you think caused her to mature so quickly?
Well, first I want to thank you for that wonderful reading. That was really great. She does have a change. I was hoping that the readers would see that she had this background when she was young of really enjoying the beach and enjoying being with her grandmother. In fact, she wouldn't even leave the beach. So that was kind of percolating, I think, in her. And I guess knowing that the shows were going to be canceled or that in the end one of them would be was the first thing that kind of gave her permission almost to let go and to grow. And then hearing from her friend, her sorority sister, who had this tragedy and had decided to stop watching the shows, I think that was the second thing that gave her permission to be able to do that herself. And so I think she had this ability within her, and it was just a matter of coming back to the beach, being with her grandmother for a time, and then these incidents that, you know, like I said, sort of gave her permission to grow. To grow at the same time that she recovered what she had lost in herself.
Marie, this is clearly a story of a very complicated relationship between a grandmother and a granddaughter who is under real pressure. Mm-hmm. How did you come up with a story? What's the genesis of this story?
Well, I often like to have characters, girls who are of the age of 12, 13, 14. Of course, Penny's older, but I also had represented her in the story as having that age. And in fact, I'm writing YA and middle grade literature. So, and then the grandmother really was partially based on my own grandmother, who did collect shells and make shell pictures, although she did not have that type of, I wouldn't say her personality was based on her, but so I was imagining a young woman, a young girl, and imagining a grandmother, and you know, what could happen if they were together, even as the girl ages out of adolescence and into adulthood. I just wanted to try my hand at trying to imagine how a relationship might work between them, or not work initially.
What's an excellent story, Marie. Tell us just a little bit about your background.
Well, I grew up in Silver Spring, Maryland. So, and my mother loved the beach just like her mother had so or did. So we used to spend our time often in the summers on the weekends at Rehoboth Beach. That was our favorite beach. So I grew up with that beach, and then I used to visit my grandmother in Georgia, southern Georgia, and she would, we'd all go to the northern Florida beaches with her, and that's where she did her shell collecting. So I had this kind of double, I was fortunate enough to have a life with beaches in two different states as I was growing up. Now, of course, I live in Cleveland, Ohio. I don't really get as much of a chance to go to the ocean, which is a shame. But I often, you know, think about that and how important the beach was to my childhood. And I've tried to make it important in my daughter's childhood as well.
Well, let me turn to Robin for a minute, Marie. Robin did a great job of reading your story. And Robin, what impressed you as you studied the reading of this story? What impressed you about this relationship and the working of Penny and her grandmother?
Well, Hal, I identified with both characters because I'm somewhere in between that age range, which is quite large, and this I think the generational struggle is very interesting in this dynamic of the relationship. What was challenging for me with doing the reading as Evelyn was she's an older woman with a kind of sort of old-fashioned expressions and speech patterns that are not me at all. But when I started reading it, the actual writing helped me to develop the character. There is no mention of what this woman looks like in the text because it's her monologue. But I got this picture in my head of what this woman looked like.
What does she look like, Robin?
She's very no nonsense, very no frills. She has a very calm and simple life, and she likes it that way. She has kind of silver gray hair. She wears it in a braid down her back, and she's got bright blue eyes, and she smiles a lot, and she wears kind of faded jeans and kind of, you know, camp shirts with button-down shirts with flowers or plaids and probably flip-flops, nice beach shoes, you know. And she always dresses comfortably, and she buys her clothing at very reasonably priced stores. And she's just a very loving, very kind person. Just full of common sense, too. And that probably it creates some of the problem between her and the granddaughter, because the granddaughter's been exposed to, you know, the iPhones and the gadgets and all the, you know, the things, the highfalutin college that, you know, her grandmother would never have gone to. And what I actually have to tell you why I identified with this 20-some-year-old girl so much, and it just made me burst out laughing when I read this story. Back when the soaps were on, one of my best friends from New York, one of my best actor friends, was Detective Fry for many years and all my children, and I watched religiously. If I wasn't there in the afternoon, I taped it and watched it in the evening. And I would always call Bill up and tell him, give him a, you know, a little critique on his performance that day. And I just loved that show. And when they canceled it, I wailed just like
tragedy.
I just wailed. I just was so distraught. So talk about totally identifying with a character. I said, "Yes, Penny, I feel your pain." So, and plus, you know, I was that age at one time myself, and I know I have several friends who are raising their grandchildren, so I have seen some firsthand experience with that, and this rang very true.
Well, one of the things that I liked about Penny's grandmother is, as you describe her, she very much is a woman who knows who she is, and I think in literature we need to talk a bit about women who know who they are, women who are strong. And the fact that impressed me was that in retirement, she made herself useful, and she had to hunt, she had to find, but she found for herself something that she liked to do, and continued to make a contribution. Marie, I thought that was a very important character to draw, and that you really did a wonderful job of that.
Thank you. Yes, I wanted to, and then the shell arrangements, you know, they fill in that blank space on the table, and that's kind of, I wanted that to represent how she filled in that blank space left by her husband dying. So thank you for having observed that. Yeah.
Well, we're almost out of time, and I want to ask you, Nancy, to tell us once more where people can get your books and how they can submit a story for the next edition of Beach Reads.
Well, the best place to look is on the website, which is catandmousepress.com. There's a whole section of the website devoted to the contest, so all the guidelines are there, the judges' names and bios are there, and so forth. This year's contest ends July 1st, so there's not a lot of time for this year, but there's always time to plan for next year. The books are available. Our prime spot is Browseabout, but they're available at Bethany Beach Books, Biblion, numerous bookstores and stores in the area. And if you're out of the area, they are available online. But if you're local, please ask for them at your local stores. We support our bookstores and gift stores.
Well, Nancy, Mary, Jackson, and Robin, thank you all for being with us today. And a particular thank you to Robin for an excellent reading of Marie's story, and to you, Jackson, for an excellent reading of your story as well. And thanks to all of you for being with us today on Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. I'm your host, Harold Wilson.
You've been listening to a special writer's edition of Delmarva Today with your host, Harold Wilson. This program is produced on the campus of Salisbury University for Delmarva Public Radio. Christopher Rank is your audio engineer. Mary Seaman is the volunteer producer. Visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, for podcasts of this program.